Welcome, everybody, to the latest in our podcast series. When we look at the market volatility and all that's happening in global events, I suspect we're going to be having many more of these podcasts coming up. So hopefully you'll join us for those. But today, I'm joined by Tom and Charlotta to discuss the volatility that we've seen in the bond markets and what we should make of this. To put that in some kind of context, just the other day, UK 30-year gilt yields actually got above 5%. And to put that in context, that's been the highest level since 1998, which I can just about remember. Not only is this happening in the UK, but we've seen the United States, which arguably has been the catalyst for all of this, where we've seen 10-year treasuries move up towards that 4.8 level. And again, just thinking about that, it doesn't sound all that high, but remember, back in 2020, 10-year treasury yields were only 0.5%. So there's no question that yields have been moving up. What we want to speak about today, really, though, is the move that we've seen really in the last few days and weeks, Tom and Charlotta. So to kick things off, maybe turning to you, Charlotta, is this a global issue? Is this something regarding the inflation outlook that we're all concerned about, or at least markets are concerned about?
I think the latest move up is pretty clear. It's driven by US policy and changes around it and the new administration and also the uncertainty around it. You don't really know what it's going to look like. And investors are rightly asking for a risk premium to invest in US government bonds. I think that's a key driver. Now, we're still living in this regime where inflation is actually running a little bit too high for investors to be really comfortable. There is still question exactly when inflation is going to come back to target and exactly how much central banks will be able to loosen policy over the coming years to keep inflation at those target levels. So I think the context is one where bond market investors are nervous, and it's been reflected in volatility. That's what we've seen over the past few years. That's nothing new. And also kind of high dependency, be it on inflation data or on political news and event.
Now, you've titled the pair of you, Temporary Treasury Turbulence Roils Global Bond Markets. I mean, I guess the giveaway is in that first word, temporary. Charlotta, you don't see this as a permanent move higher, or do you think there actually are elements that could keep these yields higher for a lot longer?
I think there are divergences. If you look at the global economy, it's a pretty weak economy. The two or the three kind of key regions, Europe and China, are basically seeing very, very little growth or no growth in some countries. There is a vulnerability in these regions. Inflation is normalizing. Central banks in these regions are loosening policy. So going forward, we would expect this to kind of be reflected in yields and rates grinding lower. I think the key outlier is the US, where we already had very, very strong growth. We had sticky inflation, and now we have a government that is signaling that they would like to kind of boost that growth dynamics even more.
And just to round off on that, Charlotta, it sounds like there's potentially a robustness around US growth. But given what we're hearing from the incoming administration, have you become more pessimistic on the rest of the world from a growth perspective?
Slightly more pessimistic on the rest of the world. There is a lot of tensions, geopolitical tensions. There are potential for trade tariffs. All of these will, of course, be difficult to kind of manage going forward. For me, it's really the uncertainty that we see going forward. If you don't really know what the global trade environment is going to look like in 2-3 years, why would you invest in big kind of capital heavy structures in either in Europe or in parts of Asia currently? So it's just this waiting game. You're waiting to see what's going to happen. And meanwhile, yes, there is a vulnerability there. The other channel, of course, is if the Federal Reserve is going to stay kind of with high rates for longer, that will have an impact on the rest of the world. The Federal Reserve sets interest rate costs, price of money globally, and that has spillover effects.
Now, Tom, turning to what sounds like is that the catalyst for this bond market move of the US and particularly the Treasury markets. I mean, I discussed there at the beginning about how much market or how much yields had moved up. What's been the real catalyst for the most recent move? Because I guess since September time, I mean, we've seen yield 10-year treasuries move from about 3.6% in September to 4.8% today. Is this just about inflation? What's also behind it the last few weeks?
I mean, well, you mentioned the last few weeks, but maybe still just taking one step back, what has been one of the most remarkable facts recently, particularly around the US economy, is how robust growth was in the US, despite one of the most aggressive tightening cycles in recent history. Now, in this environment, the Fed still decided to cut rates, which I think was the right decision because inflation was moving towards target slowly but steadily. Then came Trump's election victory, which already increases uncertainty about the policies that could follow. Many of those that we talk about, immigration, stricter immigration, potential tariffs, deregulation, most of these policies would probably further lift inflation. So we are in an environment where inflation is already proving to be a bit sticky in the US, and now we have this potential uncertainty. And on top of that, in recent days and weeks, we did get another series of relatively robust economic data. The latest few prints were, for example, within the ISM services survey, we had quite a substantial jump in prices paid. Mm-hmm. So service prices re-accelerating, that's definitely not something the Fed wants to see. On top of that, we had a relatively solid labor market report. Payrolls were growing more than expected. The unemployment rate was ticking down. And once again, we also have to put that in perspective. The market has now currently or is focusing on a narrative of worrying about stubbornly high inflation. And that's factually true. But nevertheless, there are also other stories. Even within the labor market report, we had average hourly earnings actually slightly weaker than expected. We had the quits rate within the Scholz report, which usually is a good leading indicator for wage pressure, also weaker than expected. So it's not all bleak and bad and pointing towards higher inflation, but that's the current narrative. And I think to your question, the latest move in treasuries was triggered by this set of robust economic data.
So when I look at that 4.8, I mentioned maybe we're topping out here. Maybe, however, we challenge the 5% that we saw, kind of the recent peak, a relatively recent peak we've seen in 10-year treasuries. I mean, you mentioned the word temporary in the title. So what's going to change that sentiment? What's going to change the mood of investors in US bonds to think that actually yields start to come back in again?
Well, once again, there's a few factors here. One thing, we are now roughly 1 week before inauguration day. So we're, I would say, maybe at peak uncertainty with regard to potential policies on day one. We know we have heard a lot of potential policies that could be implemented with regard to migration, with regard to tariffs. And obviously, with inauguration day now basically around the corner, markets tend to be a bit more nervous than maybe compared to 2-3 months ago, obviously. Then we still have the inflation story. As I mentioned, we did have a few of these numbers stronger than expected. We still expect inflation to fall back. We also see some positive elements. I mentioned the wage data. So we do expect inflation to fall further, which would eventually allow the Fed to keep cutting rates, although they're obviously a bit more cautious currently. So, and finally, maybe not to forget, even just technically, yes, we could see 5% for the 10-year yield. Wouldn't be the first time in recent years. But what we also saw, once we do reach the 5% or even come close to 5%, it definitely starts to hurt, well, financial markets. That's what we already see now. Stock markets are actually weighed down by higher yields. But it will eventually also start to hit the economy. Not dramatically. The US economy is very robust, but still we will see these effects in the credit sector, in the corporate sector, and also in the broader economy. And that's why we do believe that this rise that we have seen, this jump in yields, is a temporary phenomenon.
So for your sins, Tom, you also cover the UK. I mentioned earlier, we've seen that the highest 30-year gilt yields since 1998. What's the chicken and what's the egg here? Is this just the UK playing some kind of role versus treasuries? Was there anything specific to the UK that had led to the bond yields or gilt yields to move that high?
Well, first of all, once again, we have to put everything into perspective. I mean, it's true, gilt yields have also soared, mostly in line with treasuries. If we look at, for example, the 10-year gilt yields versus treasury yields, the spread has just expanded by a few basis points. So that's usually not even worth mentioning. So it's more, as we just discussed over the past 10, 15 minutes, it's a US-driven rise in yields. But for the UK, well, there are a few idiosyncratic factors. We know that the fiscal leeway that the current chancellor has is relatively limited, and it's based on a relatively benign growth outlook. Now, if yields keep rising or even stay where they are, that fiscal leeway will shrink or is basically already disappearing, which will eventually, if the chancellor sticks to her word, make it necessary to either hike taxes, or cut spending. And both obviously would not be very positive for the growth outlook, which could exacerbate the current fiscal situation. So the main trigger clearly is the US, the robust data that we talked about. But in the case of the UK, it was already a bit vulnerable. It was already a bit more fragile given the limited fiscal position that they have. So it's true. On top of what we have seen globally, we have to add a few basis points of idiosyncratic risk in the UK.
But to be clear, I mean, I've read comments about another Liz Truss moment. This sounds like it's materially different to the way it was back in 2022.
Well, I definitely would agree to that. I mean, it's definitely different than what we saw in summer 2022. There's a few reasons for that. First of all, there wasn't this should we call it reckless announcement of fiscal measures and tax cuts that we saw in summer 2022. On top of that, the Bank of England has also introduced new measures to support the gilt market in case of severe dysfunction, which hasn't happened yet, but could happen. And the bank has its own discretion there to intervene. Then it's a more robust fiscal situation. The whole concept, the whole autumn budget, the discussion about the tax hikes, about the fiscal room, about fiscal responsibility. It's just a completely different story. However, I can understand that investors now think back to what happened in summer 2022, but it's definitely a different situation. And we don't expect that to be repeated.
Now, while we were just speaking about the kind of the pull coming from the US on gilts in the UK, Charlotta, when I look at euro bonds and when I look at Swiss bonds, that hasn't been the case. There's been a bit of movement there, but nothing like what we've seen in the UK. What's going on there, and why have they been able to resist that?
Yeah, so if we look at, say, bond yields, so we look at Swiss government yields, which are more extreme, we've seen yields moving higher there as well, actually quite rapidly over the past weeks or so. But if we look at the level of yields, particularly in the Eurozone area, particularly maybe in Germany, it looks more reasonable from an economic point of view compared to what we would say around gilt yields, which are trading very closely to US Treasury yields. I mean, the fiscal situation, of course, is extremely different in these regions. Both in a country like Germany and Switzerland, we have a very low levels of government debt. There is a lot of fiscal room should the economic situation deteriorate. We also have, in the case of Switzerland, a much completely different inflation picture. We have inflation actually undershooting, and we have a central bank that is becoming concerned around deflation and negative interest rates again. That's not the situation in Eurozone, but even there, what we're seeing is that inflation is coming down. The latest wage data in particular for Germany, have been encouraging. We saw a very high increase in wage growth a few years ago, and that seems to be coming off now. Finally, we got kind of concrete data points on wage agreement that point to a significant slowing in wage growth. So even there, from a domestic point of view, especially given the weak growth that we're seeing in Eurozone, in core Eurozone countries, inflation is not really a concern from a domestic point of view. Of course, there are global issues at play here that is likely to keep inflation maybe higher for longer or more volatile than it did over the past. But I think investors, big picture, feel quite comfortable around those kind of macro fundamentals in those countries, in contrast to, for example, the UK, where the fiscal situation is so much more challenging.
I guess thinking about the UK, Tom, if you just look at where bond markets have gone, where gilts have traded, as we were speaking about, you know, there's some commentary around, the inflation dynamic, and maybe this is getting back out of hand again. I mean, your view has always been that that's not the case. Inflation will come down, and I guess maybe some of the latest data supports that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we just, as we speak today in the morning, we did get the latest set of UK inflation data. And through the band, they were better than expected, meaning lower than expected. That refers to headline inflation, to service inflation, to core inflation. And once again, also on the way down, don't make a trend out of a single data point, but it's precisely what we have been expecting. I mean, there will be bouts and volatility also in price data, but overall, we do think, we strongly believe that inflation is still falling back. And let's not forget, I mean, the UK was basically one of the first countries that actually did reach inflation target of 2% last year. Now, we did see a bit of a rebound that was also related to energy prices, for example, but the positive news is the stronger the let's say the core, the pillars and the service inflation, the service prices is keep falling, which is definitely good news for the Bank of England.
We've been mentioning, Charlotta, the inflation view that we think certainly outside the US at least inflation is going to be moving in the right direction. When you look at bonds, you're thinking about real yields and the move in that. What's your interpretation of the move that we've seen in many regions in terms of the higher real yields?
Yeah, so the sell-off that we've seen in bond markets, and that makes it more challenging from a kind of real economy point of view. It's really been driven by real yields, higher real yields. When we look at inflation break-evens and inflation market-implied inflation expectations, they are still quite contained. They're trading kind of within the recent range. We saw a move higher in oil prices over the weekend that pushed up short-term inflation expectations somewhat. But big picture, actually, if you look at pricing in financial markets, that doesn't signal that the real concern here is around inflation. It is really about strong growth and a higher, longer, high for longer outlook for the Fed. So what happens then is that inflation hasn't really ticked up. Nominal yields have risen. And clearly these rise in real yields is going to be kind of a headwind for the economy. If companies are forced to buy higher borrowing cost and they don't have an ability to raise their own prices to keep margins intact, that's going to be a bigger hurdle for them.
Let's touch on that because refinancing is going to be a major theme in the coming years. Of course, companies have done the right thing. They've termed out. They've taken advantage of the very low rates that we saw a few years ago. But now they're having to refinance. How worried are you from an economic perspective that actually we're going to see real challenges, both in Europe and perhaps the United States, in terms of this refinancing? Certainly will impact margins. But could this be a kind of a hidden recessionary risk almost that's lurking there?
Yeah, this is a risk that has been with us for some time now. We knew that this was coming. Financing costs have risen sharply, and we knew that kind of COVID environment was very, very favorable. Now, what happened, of course, was that companies managed to lock in very, very low borrowing costs. They were forward-looking. Yeah, they were prudent. Yeah. They locked
those
in.
They did the right thing, yeah.
They did absolutely the right thing. We also had a very strong nominal growth environment. We had strong real growth, and we had actually strong pricing power. That's why we've seen inflation rising. So that has been so far a pretty good environment for companies to operate in. Now, going forward, if we borrowing costs remain high, they come down a little bit, but we're kind of hitting the time when more and more companies need to refinance. And of course, and I think that's critical, some argue that this relationship between interest rates and the cost of money and the real economy that has broken down, and that's why we're not seeing a slowdown in the global economy or in the US economy. Well, we disagree with that. We think there is a strong linkage, and I think we should watch those credit markets and also real estate market as we move forward. Borrowing costs are higher, and we would see it. We don't expect a recession. I think it's a fundamentally different period compared to 2-3 years ago when rates and yields were still rising in large parts of the world. In developed economies, in particular in Europe, we're seeing rates coming down. We're seeing central banks being able to loosen policy. And that's a very different environment from one where you don't really know where rates are going to land after in a rate hiking cycle.
Tom, I'll come on to you in a minute about the Fed and your forecast for Fed rates. But Charlotte, just thinking about that, you know, we had been, I think most people have been hopeful that we were in a rate cutting cycle, which implies some time of rate cuts. I mean, the Fed just started in, I guess, September last year cutting rates. If you're a central banker right now and you listen to what you've said about the refinancing risks and the challenges that are out there also from a growth perspective, should they be being bold? Should they be looking through the current volatility and acting, you know, somewhat decisively by cutting again?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that's the key question going forward. If the narrative among central banks will shift towards one where they're actually more focused on growth. I think to get there, we really need to maybe see a few more inflation data prints that confirm this. And it's particularly on the services side. Services inflation is still running too high for central banks, rightly so, to be really comfortable. So I don't think there is an urgency right now for central banks to start cutting and becoming much more aggressive on the rate cutting side. What I think is important is to kind of guide and provide a clear narrative what they're trying to achieve. If they are seeing a reason for continuing to cut rates, then that needs to be clearly signaled. So participants in the economy and in financial markets have a clear understanding of what's going on. I think the Swiss National Bank is interesting.
Interesting in a British sense.
No, interesting in a genuinely interesting sense.
Okay, very good.
The S&B was very hawkish, one of the kind of more hawkish central banks where they started to hike rates. But what we saw roughly 1 year ago is quite a marked swing towards the dovish side. We've seen one of the first, it was the first G10 central bank to cut rates. The last rate cut surprised on the downside again. Inflation continues to undershoot expectation, and there are prospects for more rate cuts ahead. So they were proactive, they were early, and they're clearly also a little bit concerned about the economy. So I think there is a question, is this showing you what is coming in other regions? There are some differences. So I don't think we should map it one-to-one to what might happen elsewhere. But clearly, there are also disinflationary trends right now globally.
But let me just intervene there, because I can think of one off the top of my head that is different. I mean, looking at Brazil, Brazil was a country that was, early hiking rates. They then paused. They were then early to cut rates. And here we are now in Brazil. Inflation has picked up. And guess what? The central banks have lifted rates. Now, we would, I guess, applaud the independence of central banks. But is this a harbinger potentially for other countries?
That wouldn't be our base. And Tom can talk through the Fed outlook there. But what's going on in Brazil is a combination of FX weakness, which is really coming from that strong dollar environment, in combination with very strong domestic growth, fiscal expansion, and also very strong wage pressures in the economy. And I think, as you said, it's a good thing the central bank is hiking rates, because you need that to contain dynamics in the economy. It's also a different economy in the sense that inflation expectations are not as well anchored as they would be in the US or in Europe, for example. And that adds to vulnerabilities for the central bank.
Well, that noted, Tom, and we just spoke about an economy in Brazil where you've got a government that is providing a lot of fiscal incentives, stimulus, boosting growth. Isn't that what we're going to get in the United States to some extent? We've got an incumbent president who's speaking about making America great again, wanting tax cuts, extensions. Is this going to put the Fed under real pressure? Will they respond the way that the central bank in Brazil has by saying, look, we are independent. If we've got the fiscal side coming through that's potentially inflationary, we're going to hike rates. Is that even a possibility in 2025?
Well, first of all, it's definitely a possibility. It's not our base case, but it's something that you can't reasonably exclude. Now, but once again, step by step, maybe. Well, first of all, it is our strong belief that most of these policies and measures that have been announced, many of them will come, like tariffs, deregulation, maybe some tax cuts, although that's already a bit more challenging, but far less substantial than what people believe and maybe also what the incoming president wanted to make us believe. I mean, also with regard, for example, let's just take one example, Elon Musk boasting about $2 trillion of potential savings. I mean, just remember that the discretionary deficit or the discretionary spending part of the U.S. deficit is $1.8 trillion. That would mean wiping out more than all of the discretionary spending, which just puts in perspective what's actually really feasible. So, yes, at the margin, I do think that most of the policies are growth enhancing and supporting inflation, which is probably one reason why the Fed has turned more cautious. Absolutely. I mean, we mentioned it, inflation has already been stubbornly and sticky and maybe moving slower than many hoped for, which is the reason why the Fed, yes, they did cut rates in December, but they made it quite clear they will pause. They will pause at least in January, maybe even longer, if they have to, because inflation is not moving as they expected. But in the end, I think it's not so important or not so crucial whether they will cut once or twice or three times. I think the real worry by investors and financial markets is, as you mentioned, will they cut at all or will they actually have to hike rates? Once again, I don't think that's likely. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's a possibility. And as long as we don't have more certainty with regard to the path of inflation, with regard to future policies, I think this volatility, this uncertainty will remain, which will lead to these turbulence episodes in the bond market that we have seen. But just to be clear, we do expect the Fed to cut rates, to keep cutting rates in 2025, and we do expect inflation to fall back, and we do expect bond yields to fall back from current levels. Not all the way back to the 0.5 that you mentioned for treasuries, but from the current levels.
Thinking about the bond market moves that we've seen, I mean, I've spoken in the past about perhaps, particularly in the United States, it's going to be the financial markets that impose some constraints on the incoming president's ambitions. Do you think he's taken note of this market move we've seen in bond yields, the fact that actually the equity market has begun to wobble given that higher discount rate that can be applied? Would that be something that you think would temper perhaps some of the policies or the emergence of some of the policies early in his term?
I definitely do think so, because we all know about the importance of particularly the bond market to, well, politicians and policies. And in the case of Trump, probably even more so with regard to the stock market. We know from his first term that he does react to what's happening in the stock market, both on the positive side and the negative side. So were the new administration really to implement, let's say, broad-based tariffs or massively stricter immigration rules, the market would react, both the bond market and linked to this also the stock market. And I do think that puts some constraints on how far the new administration is able and willing to go.
Just to conclude, we spoke about, or you mentioned that you expect treasury yields, gilt yields, I guess, as well, to come back in. From an investor's perspective, is this something that there's good potential in from current levels? Or do you think we have to see maybe even a retest of that 5% or at least a turn in the momentum or direction of travel for yields to become more optimistic from an investor's perspective?
Well, I think to answer that, I think we have to differentiate amongst the region. We talked a lot about the UK as well. And I think the UK particularly is probably one of the at least developed markets that is furthest away from what you would economically consider to be reasonable. I mean, look, nominal growth is relatively modest. I mean, real growth is almost non-existent. We have inflation, which is, as we mentioned, probably falling back. So the 4.8, almost 5% that we see in 10-year gilts seems out of way. So yes, there definitely is a bit of substantial potential maybe. As an investor, I would like to see a bit of a stabilization or even yields to move back. And maybe today is precisely the day that we start to see this, because initially we mentioned this better than expected inflation numbers in the UK. For the US, there you could say current levels are more justified because growth is absolutely more robust, plus inflation, again, also at elevated levels. But even there, I would expect the treasury yields also to fall back. But that's not, I wouldn't say it's not an opportunity that you have to jump on right now. Even there, you want to see maybe one or two positive inflation prints, maybe a more dovish Fed statement, or maybe some more modest growth numbers, or some more certainty around the future path of policy.
And to conclude, Charlotta, with you, you've made the point in the past that you're expecting bond yields to be a bit higher going forward than they were certainly prior to the pandemic. Is this just confirmation of that, or is there certain fundamental shifts that you're seeing that perhaps are more concerning to you in terms of where that ultimate run rate or level is likely to be for global bond yields?
Yeah, I think... compared to pre-COVID, yes, definitely yields should continue to remain. Longer-term bond yields should remain at a higher level because we are in a fundamentally different kind of economic and geopolitical environment. I think inflation will be more volatile, more unpredictable. Ultimately, we have those central banks and we want to see them continue to kind of tighten or loosen policy as they should. So that kind of means that I wouldn't expect things to get out of hand. In terms of levels where we are, I mean, Tom already answered there. I think UK stands out. Some of the divergences are puzzling, for example, Swiss yields versus Bund yields. Should they really be at these extreme levels, given the close linkages between the countries? But yes, I think we are seeing confirmation that this is a very different environment compared to what we saw the last decade.
Tom, Charlotta, thank you very much. I think there are times that we're in where we have a lot of volatility. It's very easy to get seduced by the noise or extrapolate some of the direction. So I think it's great that you've put this paper out. For all our listeners, do look it up on our website, Temporary Treasury Turbulence Roils Global Bond Markets. Make sure you've got your teeth well fixed in before you say that title. But thank you to you both and to all the listeners. I'm sure we're going to have much more coming up very soon. Speak to you soon.